Good morning, members. Call the Tax Committee meeting to order this morning. No, Mr. Abler, I can still see you. This morning, members, we have several bills on the agenda, first of which is House File 770. Representative Abler, the Chair will move House File 770 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the time, and if you put this in your bill, it'll be a much better bill, and the world will be a much better place. So I appreciate your attention to this worthy project this morning. And I'll be quite brief. This is another one of, I think, a long line of federal tax conformity bills you'll be hearing over the course of today and the session. This is a little niche conformity having to do with teacher reimbursements for expenses. Very often, the teachers who are devoted to their students will go and spend out of their pocket various expenses like school supplies and party expenses or whatever they're going to do that there's not a fund for at their districts. And we try to compensate them, I guess. The federal people decided it would be okay to compensate them up to a limit of $250 a year for those kinds of expenses. They'd be documented and recorded in their file and then indicated on their tax form. The proposal before you is to extend that Minnesota conformity to this group of people. They say that fiscal note's about potentially $2.4 million. I don't know if they would all take it or not, but I think the fiscal note assumed 55,000 teachers at $250. So that's the short version, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your consideration today.
Thank you, Representative Abler. Representative Coles, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abler, is there any kind of restriction or limitation with regard to the types of things that teachers can claim as expenses?
The list that I'm aware of is books, supplies, computer equipment, and other equipment. I'm not sure how deeply they go into other equipment. It would not include party supplies.
I guess that was, Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, that was my question based on your comment. I was wondering if there were, if we're going to allow deductions for parties. I enjoy parties. I know my kids enjoy parties, but I'm not sure that that's really what we ought to be doing. I think we ought to encourage it to be used for things like books and supplies if we're going to do it at all.
So good point, and we're on the same page. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, do you know how they came up with the $2.5 million fiscal notes?
I just got it myself. Do you have the fiscal note in front of you?
Yeah.
They do have the detail of it, and maybe the department could tell you how they calculate it. I would expect, as I read this, not being on your committee, the department might want to comment more, but it appears they took the $250 times the possible teachers who could have used it times the marginal rates, and it came up with, and they used 1.98%, I think, as the marginal rate. I don't know how they did that. Cool. That's on the third bullet on revenue analysis detail. Beyond that, it's beyond me how they came up with the price.
Mr. Chairman, maybe we could ask somebody, is there a valid estimate that every teacher's going to use that? Is that what you indicated was the estimate based on?
I just read they didn't talk to me. They just made their own estimate. I'll defer to
that. That's the way they work, Representative Abler. They don't talk to anybody. They just make their calculations.
I didn't feel bad, Mr.
Welcome,
Mr. Manson. Chair, Jack Manson with the Department of Revenue, and unfortunately, I only know what's in print before you as well. So, but it is based on federal estimates, and then a portion to Minnesota, based on the number of Minnesota-based elementary and secondary school teachers, which is about 1.9% of the national population, and then we applied the appropriate federal and state tax rates. And then they were converted from federal to state fiscal years. So, and then we're estimating that potentially 55,000 teachers would take advantage of the $250 expense deduction.
Representative Abler, the educator expense, as we're saying, what is the definition of educator? I mean, this is someone who could be a preschool teacher? Is this a licensed educator in the state of Minnesota? College professor? Is do we have a might give us some indication as to why the 55,000, I believe. Obviously, there are far more licensed teachers in the state of Minnesota than 55,000.
Mr. Chair, it does conform to the federal definition. I didn't pull that down to know it. The tax department might know the answer to that question, but it conforms with whatever the federal definition was. It's purely conformity.
Does our crack staff have a concept of what the federal law defines educator as?
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, I guess I need to start bringing my Internal Revenue Code to committee, but I believe it's K through 12. I don't believe that this includes the preschool teachers, and I'm just guessing that the Department of Revenue looked at the number of active or employed teachers in the state, and that's why the number is quite a bit smaller than the licensed number, I'm sure. And Ms. Manzi and I were just talking, and I think that we actually have return data now for the first year that this was in effect. The department used the federal estimates, but it's possible that we could look at what the return data is for this and see how that matches up with allocating the federal estimate. One concern is that I think, Minnesota's income is quite a bit above average, and so there may be more teachers that are spending up to the maximum in Minnesota than the national average. So, but we can check on that.
Okay. Representative Mullery, does that satisfy your intellectual? Okay. I think that's going to be as much as we're going to get. Okay. Any further questions from committee members? Anyone in the audience who wants to testify either in favor or in opposition? If not, thank you, Representative Abler.
Thank
for
you, Chair. It's always good to be here.
Oh, Representative Lucheski's here now.
Thank you, Chairman. And Representative Abler, I just wanted to bring to the committee's attention that, and I know that Representative Abler knows this, but Representative Rood, Representative Maria Rood, has this identical bill. And, in fact, they were introduced on the same day. And I think they're 10 bills apart. And I know that, Mr. Chair, that you had Representative Wilkin and Representative Knobloch introduce their bills together. And I know that Representative Abler and Representative Rood are doing the same thing. She actually wanted you all to know that, she was an author of this bill. And I want to thank Representative Abler because he did ask her to come and testify with him today. She's actually meeting with the governor right now, so she couldn't be here. But I do want to say that this is something that has a lot of bipartisan support, and I want to thank Representative Abler for bringing it forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Kumbaya, Mr. Chair.
Well, the Representative Lucheski staff informs me that Representative Rood's bill is not identical, but we can certainly take a look and find out what the differences are, and if we feel we want to. You want to? Do we want to enter into what we won't? We won't go to what the differences are, but it's a similar bill, yes.
Yeah,
so, anyway, we won't go there now. Thank you very much, Representative Abler. The chair lays over House File 770 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you. Next members, we have Representative Tyson here. Tyson, I'm sorry. Don't want to get you confused with chicken.
Thank you.
Chairman, I move that House File 1234 be recommended and passed for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Abrams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with me today is Ruth Ann McNay from the CPA organization. 1234, briefly, Mr. Chair and committee members, built on legislation the committee and the legislature passed in 2003, which created some basic standards of conduct for tax preparers and also some disclosure requirements for tax preparers who offer RALs. And since passage of that bill, we've been working with a broad group, including the Department of Revenue and accountants and consumer advocates and others, to see if there what issues were involved in the what problems may have been involved in the first bill and look for possible improvements. And so this legislation does really four things. The first, and this is in sections 1 through 3, are basically just reorganization and clarification provisions. The main change, substantive change, is that the standards of conduct that were passed in 2003 will now apply not just to tax preparers who offer RALs, but to all tax preparers with the exemptions that were passed in 2003 continuing to apply. The second thing is it authorizes publication of information about tax preparers who have engaged in fairly egregious conduct, criminal violations, fraud, serious violations of the standards of conduct. And really what that is about is one of the things that we found is that a lot of what we need to do here is to empower consumers, empower folks that are getting their taxes prepared, and this is one more piece of information that will empower them to make the right decisions. And we put in a fairly clear process, I think, for this, including a necessity of a final judgment, prior notice to the tax preparer, provisions for removal from the list, and damages for improper publication. There is provision for exchange of information among the three people that often get the three bodies that often get the complaints: the Department of Revenue, the board that oversees accountants, and the lawyer professional responsibility of board. And the idea there is sometimes the accountancy board will get a complaint about someone who's not within their jurisdiction. This would just authorize them to pass that along to Revenue, who actually could investigate and take some action, and vice versa. So it's just an exchange of information among the enforcement agencies. And the last thing is a Department of Revenue request. Currently, under the statute that was passed in 2003, the Department of Revenue can prohibit a tax preparer from filing electronically if they violate the standards of conduct. But they can't prohibit, there's no authorization in the law to prohibit to revoke the ability to file electronically if a taxpayer violates the fraud provisions or the criminal provisions. So this is just to give them that authority. And it's a fairly effective enforcement tool because so much of the tax preparation practice is now conducted electronically. And that is an overview of the bill. I can answer questions about that portion or let Ms. McNay go ahead and speak to the bill. At your discretion.
That's fine. Ms. McNay, you want to give us your comments?
All right, thank you. Thank you, Chairman Krenke and members of the Tax Committee. My name is Ruth Ann McNay. I'm a certified public accountant and an enrolled agent. I have my own CPA firm in Oakville, Minnesota, and I am a member of the Minnesota CPA Society and the American Institute of CPAs. Currently, I chair the Task Force on Regulation of Tax Preparers for the Minnesota State Society. House File 1234 has been a team effort with the Minnesota Department of Revenue, the Minnesota CPAs, and Representative Thiessen. We have been meeting since the early fall. In most states and in Minnesota, anyone can prepare tax returns. U.S. News and World Report in the February 28th issue had the following quote: "We now have more people in the business of preparing tax returns than we have in the Army. There is no licensing requirement to handle the financial reporting of the citizens of the United States. CPAs are regulated by the Board of Accountancy. Attorneys have the Bar Association, and enrolled agents have the Office of Professional Responsibility under the Internal Revenue Service. No one may be watching your preparer in doing your return. From 5 years of working in a tax attorney office and to my own firm, I have seen fraudulent returns and have heard the comment, my preparer always fixed it so I would have a refund. House File 1234 has approached the regulation of tax preparers in a very practical, revenue neutral, but visual manner. It is utilizing what is in place to be more effective. The two key areas are when the Board of Accountancy receives a complaint on a tax preparer and that person is not a CPA, instead of closing the file, that information will be forwarded on to the Department of Revenue. And the same will happen in the Bar Association. The second area is the fraudulent preparer that's fraudulent because they've gone through a process and has been penalized will be on a public list on the Department of Revenue website. This will be similar to the LinkNet that is on the site now. If you'd like some interesting reading, I would suggest that you look at the LinkNet. It used to be 2 to 3 pages long. Now it's massive. Please support House File 1234. A courtesy comment for you all. There are 30 days left until April 15th, or as of 10 a.m. this morning, there were 734 hours left. If you start now, you may have enough time because every line on your tax return, on the schedules, on the form, takes at least 1 hour. But maybe you will take more time, so you better hurry. If you use a preparer, we hope it will be a licensed preparer. Thank you, Chairman Krinke, the Tax Committee, and Representative Thiessen, for your time and support.
Any questions, members? Yes, everybody loves this bill. So,
I hope you do.
Is there anyone in the audience who wants to testify in favor or in opposition to House File 1234?
You can ask a question.
Representative Abrams.
Just having a sidebar with Representative Krinke. Once you get into data practices, there's a whole other group that isn't in this room, the Civil Law Committee, that sometimes is anxious to look at some of the data practices issues. Have you had an opportunity to talk to some of the members who are involved in those issues, Representative Thiessen?
No, that's a good point. Is that Civil Law or is it GovOps, which...
Civil law.
I haven't. So maybe we should.
You might want to chat with the chairman of the Civil Law Committee about your legislation, and we find out whether they want to take a look at it or not. They may or they may not. So
yeah, and there's the data privacy issues are. I'll talk to them. They're relatively small, and just to allow some exchange, but I will speak with them.
Some chairs are more tenacious about their purview than others, so I wouldn't want you to get in trouble with members on the Civil Law Committee.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would suspect that this bill could go to local government if the chair of that committee had an opportunity to read the bill.
There are some other provisions in the bill, Representative Thiessen, that... So again, it's always better to dot the I's and cross the T's in these situations than to run amok of someone who really wants to examine the legislation a little more closely in committee. So,
all right, well, I will speak with them, and if we need to make the motion, I'll do that.
Then, members, any other questions or comments from members? If not, the department, would you like to... come forward, Mr. Manson, give us your view of the legislation, since it does have some impacts for the department.
Mr. Chairman, we also are concerned about tax preparers, that they do a good job, and we have provisions in our department bill as well dealing with tax preparers. We have met with Representative Bison and worked out... 3 or 4 of the concerns we had, so I think we're on board with this legislation, and I would support the bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any other comments, questions? If not, Chair will lay over House File 1234 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative. Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that House File 1789 be recommended to pass and considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Representative Abrams. You want to give us an explanation of what 1789 does?
Mr. Chairman and members, late last year, let me go back. In 2001, Congress passed a tax cut bill that did a number of things, but for purposes of this conversation, what it did was over a number of years, it raised the standard deduction, and it also eliminated the marriage penalty that was implicit in the federal deduction between married filing jointly and single individuals. In the fall of 2004, and Minnesota did conform to those changes, and we'll be getting into that when we discuss the fiscal note. In 2003, in order to give the full story, some of the changes that were phased in the 2001 bill were accelerated, and they accelerated them, I believe, in May of 2003. And even though the bill was not heard in either the House or the Senate, and we were in conference committee or working groups or whatever, Minnesota conformed to changes made in the standard deduction made by Congress in May of 2003. In the fall of 2004, Congress again accelerated the increase in ending the marriage penalty of the standard deduction, so that for federal taxes payable in 2005 and beyond, the standard deduction for an individual is $5,000, and the federal deduction for married filing jointly is $10,000. And the standard deduction for married filing separately is $5,000. Minnesota is once again not conforming with the federal changes because they're making the federal changes so fast and furiously. We had adopted the schedule by which we would, that the feds had in place. So what House File 1789 does, and it's relatively simple, is simply have the same standard deduction available for Minnesota taxes payable in 2005 and beyond as is currently in effect for federal taxes. If 1789 is not adopted, if you are a standard deduction taxpayer, which includes approximately two-thirds of Minnesotans, you will have a line on the form which will be an add-back, which will be a little bit different if you are married filing separately, or an individual. Over a period of, I believe, 3 years, that line will disappear. The numbers will change because, as I previously stated, Minnesota had adopted the federal schedule for getting to the $5,000 single, $10,000 married filing jointly return. So if you do nothing, there will be a line on the form in which you're going to be adding back income if you are a standard deduction taxpayer. Now on to the fiscal note. Members have in the packet a fiscal note to show that the change would be roughly $70 million. That's with six zeros after a 70, members, given the year that we're in. To conform for this biennium, and roughly $24 million for the previous biennium, because again, it costs less going out because you already have increases of in the standard deduction in place. In a rare bit of good news, House staff, Ms. Manzi and Dr. Wilson, have discover that there may have been some problems in the department's estimate because there are going to be a number of filers who are currently itemizing who will become non-itemizers, and they are still working on what the final number will be with the department. It appears on a first cut that the real number will be about $65 million rather than $70 million for this biennium. But I would suspect that even in April and May, this number may be sliding around a little bit as we get closer in putting the bill together. I don't know if it was in members' packets or not, but Dr. Wilson has put together a chart showing who gets the relief. and it's a fair statement that I believe that 94% of the relief will be given to incomes of less than $150,000, 92% of the relief for, or excuse me, 85% of the relief for $100,000 and below. So the beneficiaries of this are basically individuals or married couples who don't have a mortgage, or probably renters, or have a smaller mortgage and smaller property taxes, and would have less than $10,000 of itemized deductions. They would be the beneficiaries of this. So that, Mr. Chairman, is a nutshell of House File 1789. I believe that it is extraordinarily good tax policy. It will add to the ease of being able to fill out the returns. And it is going to be, frankly, members, a challenge in order to find space for this at the end, given some of the other challenges that are before this committee as far as revenue raisers and accelerators and whatever. And, you know, the question can rightly be asked, what are you doing cutting taxes by $70 million for this classification of taxpayers? But I think that the public good here far outweighs some of the pain we're going to have to go through in order to try to accommodate this item. But I would hope that people would approach it with an open mind, and you know, it may be a little bit difficult, but I think that there may be a way to shoehorn it in, particularly under the strong leadership of Representative Crankey, because as Representative Rucavina would say, I know where your heart is, Representative Crankey, and I know you want to do this. So that's the bill. That's the bill in a nutshell. I'd be very happy to stand for questions. Oh, I do want to say that Representative Steve Simon, I believe on bill introductions yesterday, had a similar bill. I'm the second author in that bill, and Representative Simon is on this bill. And I would suspect that there'll be other members, and we certainly have room on 1789 for additional authors of any political party or persuasion who would want to be a co-author of this bill.
My first question would be to staff, Ms. Manzi. The revenue estimates here speak of estimated 503,000 returns. With the change in calculation, I presume that number would decrease?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. The initial estimate is that the number of affected taxpayers decreases to around $460,000. 460,000 taxpayers.
Be about 900,000 individuals, Mr. Chairman, or about 1.5 congressional districts.
Thank you for that clarification. Maybe we should have the department give us estimates by congressional district returns. And what, Ms. Manzi or Ms. Michael, do we have an estimate as to what the average impact on tax on the filer would be, what their estimated differential in tax would be?
$78, Mr. Chairman.
A whopping $78, okay.
Mr. Chairman, to quote you, if it's your $78, it's whopping. If it's somebody else's $78, it's just a contribution to government.
Okay. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abrams, you referred to some data that Dr. Wilson has put together. I don't think I have it. I don't know if other members...
Yeah, we can get copies of it made. It's... I got an email yesterday. It's table one. It is certainly.
We'll get to see
that. Yeah, and on a bit of old business, I also have in my office the distribution from the AMT bill from last week that breaks it down both by the above the line increase in the charitable contribution as well as the AMT change. And I was a little bit surprised at number two in that deal, and that the distribution was really centered on $150,000 and below. I was really surprised by that issue, but I'll get both distributions to the members of the committee.
Thank you.
Other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who wants to testify in favor or in opposition to House File 1789? You didn't bring any married couples, Representative Abrams, to...
They're too, Mr. Chairman, they're too busy working down here to complain about their taxes.
I would have thought out of the 460,000, maybe you could have found a couple. But okay, if there's no one wants to comment or give any further questions, thank you, Representative Abrams. We'll lay over House File 1789 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. The members, just a couple of orders of business. Number one, again, we have a list of bills to refer to the division. Representative Vandeveer's division is getting laden with lots of legislation. So they are House File 1584, Representative Mullery, House File 1613, Representative Lesch, House File 1624, Representative Davids, House File 1684, House File 1691, House File 1698, House File 1784, and House File 1790, and House File 1797. So, complete list, members available at Mr. Stone's, outside Mr. Stone's office, and I presume... also available online, Representative Stone. Mr. Stone, I'm Representative Stone. Mr. Stone. Yes? Yes, okay. Okay. Members, we have the page handing out the information that Representative Abrams referred to by our House fiscal staff, where the impact of the... income range for those members or for those filers. So. The then members, the only other order of business, the Representative Vandeveer, would you care to move the minutes from the March 15th meeting?
So moved.
Okay. Any additions, deletions, corrections to the minutes? If not, all those in favor of the minutes from the March 15th meeting, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those who are opposed, the minutes are adopted. Members, tomorrow we have Representative Vandeveer's division will be meeting. And the members, I would just ask one other thing. If you introduce legislation and you submit a hearing request, that we would expect that you would be within reasonable time willing and able to have your bill heard. If you're introducing legislation for political purposes and you don't want the bill heard, then don't submit a hearing request, okay? So that would be one of those things that we would ask you, because we obviously have a lot of bills, and some are very similar. Some are quite substantial in what they their tax impact. So, again, if you're introducing a bill for just political purposes, then don't submit a hearing request, okay? If you do submit a hearing request, be prepared and ready to appear before the committee when we can schedule you. So, Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Krinke. On that, that's good to know. And let me just ask you, in general, sometimes when a legislator has a set of issues or an issue they'd like to address, they'll introduce, I've done this myself, 3, 4, 5 bills, kind of attacking the problem from different angles, trying to figure out what's politically palatable. And I will tell you that I myself in the past have put in a budget hearing or a hearing request on every single one, hoping the chair would take one. So
we call that trolling, Winchester, or what?
Exactly right. And so that's why I'm asking you, and I'm glad you're telling us how you want to conduct things, because I certainly would be guilty of that myself personally, in just trying to get a hearing. Is the better way to go about this just to take 5 minutes and talk to you instead of covering Craig with hearing requests? Because I think we're going to have a lot of members on our side very soon, you know, who've been working on all their other subject matters. They know there's not a deadline on taxes, so they've sort of put off those bills, and I think we'll see both sides will start flowing with tax bills. So
you mean they haven't been flowing yet?
Well, I don't think so. So I just, you know, is that your preference, that people should try to catch you, or what would you like to do with that?
What I would suggest is that you talk to Mr. Stone first, in terms of, again, if you have several pieces of legislation that, as you say, deal with, say, the same subject matter, let's say the alternative minimum tax, and so you've submitted several bills of somewhat similar topic, then talk to Mr. Stone about which one you... Which is top on the priority list? Again, if there are several, I mean, we will take time to do single sales. We'll take time to do alternative minimum tax. We'll cover some of those broad topic areas. So if we do have three or four bills dealing with that subject matter, we will take them all, or try to take them all at the same time. But there again, that's what I said. If you truly are interested in having that bill heard, then put in a hearing request. If you're putting in a bill that, as I said, you believe in, but it's not ready for prime time, then don't submit a hearing request. Or if it's not ready for prime time, then tell Mr. Stone that it's not ready yet. Whether it is in the legislation, you may be working on amendments, you may be waiting for to find out if the bill moves in the Senate, or some, you might be waiting for some people to line up your testifiers, those types of things. Understand all those things. Just in terms of trying to schedule what's going on, that's why we're not going to take our full committee time today, because we had intended to hear a bill that the author said, when Mr. Stone called him, said, well, I don't want to hear it now. So that's part of what I'm saying. It's difficult enough to schedule without authors saying that their legislation isn't ready for a hearing when we try to schedule it. Mr. Mullery.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if you planted that statement about having a lot of bills to have an excuse to keep all of those boxes under my table and take over my file cabinet.
You didn't know, did you notice that I cleaned out one of your file cabinets the other day so I could use some of them? No. Anyway, again, members, and I will try to do my best to get these things scheduled, but it does make it difficult when we have situations like this occur. So, Representative Winchester.
Thank you, Chairman Krenke. Since we're kind of talking about the process here again, which I really appreciate how you worked with all of us on that, and that matters to us, and I know it's always moving around here, but can you talk a little bit, since we have a few minutes here, about the calendar really for the committee, maybe through the end of April? I mean, how do you see, what should we achieve before the break? When do you think the omnibus tax bill will be put together? When might we be looking at amendments from the minority, votes, floor? Kind of just big picture, how we should be planning in our heads.
Are we going to have an omnibus? The first question, are we going to have a tax bill?
Well,
the first and foremost, that decision will likely not be made by myself, but by leadership with regard to the issue of is the tax bill the first out or the last out? And to my knowledge, that decision has not been made. I haven't had those discussions with leadership at this point, but they will be coming soon. So if the tax bill is the first bill out, I think you know that we're going to have a very rapid agenda over the next month. If the decision is that the tax bill will be later in the agenda, then our pace will be a little different. So I can't answer at this point whether it's going to be first or last. Any other No other comments, questions? I mean, again, always feel free to try to, I mean, my schedule, like everyone's about now with committee and the like, is fairly busy, but always you can try to catch me on the floor if, again, if it's an individual bill or if it's things pertaining to general committee, happy to discuss those. Or, again, please feel free to discuss those with Mr. Stone. If there are no further business to come before the committee, meeting's adjourned.